Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. I'm Jason Abrams, and this is the place where we lift the curtain on the world of real estate like never before. Every week, I sit down with visionaries, pirates, and mavericks. We're here to document, demonstrate, and most importantly, demystify their game-changing models and systems. What secrets propel them to the top? And how are they living their dreams? This is about passion, it's about strategy, but above all, it's about real, tangible success. So buckle up and let's dive in. This is the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. Friends, you are in for it today. Today, I am joined by Tiffany Fikes. Now, if you don't know who Tiffany is, get ready, because in a moment, you won't be able to ever forget her. Now, I know that's saying a lot, but here's the thing. It only took Tiffany 4 years to become a millionaire real estate agent. She got into it and started crushing it right out of the gate. Here's what's really unique about her story. She's still a millionaire real estate agent today, but she spends half her time living in New York City, the other half of the time in her home market in Tennessee. And as if she needed another challenge, she not only homeschools her kids, but she travels all around the world, giving them experience how she does it. Here's what I know. There's plenty of people that have become successful. There's few people that I've met that have spent the time defining what success looks like than Tiffany has. We're about to unpack how you live the life that you want. Friends, it's a life by design. Sit back and get ready. This is Tiffany Fikes. And today I am joined by Tiffany Fikes. Tiffany, how are you?
I'm great. Jason, how are you? I'm so excited to be here.
We are so excited to have you. I know you listen to the show. I listen to yours, by the way. Love it. We'll talk about that. We've had people who have taught us so much about building businesses. It's been fantastic. We have not had anybody, though, who spends half their time in a different city than where their business is based and is still an MREA. That absolutely defies the way that so many people think about a local business. And we're going to dig into it. But before we do, I kind of want to hear the origin story. So everyone looks up today and sees you living this incredible life in New York and in Nashville and traveling the world and running masterminds and being on podcasts, and you're living big. But it didn't start that way.
No, it definitely didn't. I actually went to film school. And so I know it's crazy. I actually started making documentaries before documentaries were cool, before Netflix existed, and did that for a few years. And my husband was a residential architect, and we always had a dream to work together. And we kind of both put our heads down and succeeded in our individual professions and kind of realized, oh, wait, we said we wanted to work together. And we kind of like looked up and said, we are not Chip and Joanna Gaines. Like, we are not going to be making a show about real estate or anything like that. So do we really want to work together, or do we want to keep going on individual tracks? And you'll hear that theme through my story a lot, of just waking up one day, having succeeded, and then saying, wait, is this what I really wanted? And ultimately, I decided I would miss film, but I really want to work with my husband and build something with my husband. And so I started saying no to gigs, which is basically like the nail in the coffin in the industry. You know, you understand the entertainment industry.
I was on a TV show that my mother loved. Yes. You must really like this guy.
I know, I really do like this guy. But I also got to do some really cool things. I got to make my own documentary. I got to walk a red carpet. I got to do enough stuff that I knew I wouldn't look back and like seriously regret making a change. I would miss it, but I wouldn't regret it. And I had some skills that he didn't have. He was a great architect, but maybe not as forward customer facing. And so I said, all right, I'm going to join you in your residential architecture, and we're going to do this together, and we're going to design, build, and sell houses, and it's going to be awesome. And so I kind of shut down the production stuff in 2007. which if you were in the industry or even really in the professional world in 2007, you understand that we're on the precipice of a cliff and our entire business disappeared in 6 months. All mid-project stopped. It was crazy. We really didn't know what was going on because the economy wasn't doing anything weird at that point. But because design, like architecture design, is considered a luxury, it's the first thing to go. It's almost like the canary in the coal mine of there's a problem. And so we kind of looked around and said, what are we going to do? Like, we have no clients. What's going on? Do I need to go back into this other industry, or is this what we really want? And took about 6 months doing whatever it took. And by whatever it took, I mean, Joshua was delivering pizza to pay our bills. Like, we were doing whatever it took to survive. And then our friends started losing jobs. Then our contractors started losing their homes, and it just got insane. And we're like, okay, that wasn't just us. Something was happening, and we just need to make it through. And that looked like a year of scraping together pennies. And truly, the math didn't actually work, but our bills all got paid for an entire year. And then we said, all right, let's look at this plan again. Design, build, sell. We still believe in this. We're still going to do this. How do we move this forward in the midst of a nightmare of surviving? Because we're not going to go get a job, number one, probably because there's no jobs to be had, but also we're committed to this path. And so we said, design, okay, we know how to do that. Build, yeah, we're not going to do that because those people are like losing their actual homes right now, which left us with sell. And so I said, you have the architecture license. I'll go get my real estate license. While the market is in the tanks, we're not going to sell anything. We're still just going to survive. But I'll know what I'm doing so that when the market recovers, we'll be there and we'll be ready to go. And that was in 2009. So I got my license in May of 2009. I actually joined Keller Williams because I love education, but also it had the highest cap in our market at the time. But I thought, this doesn't matter. I'm not actually going to sell anything. So I want to pick the company that will give me the most, knowing I'm not actually going to do it. So May of 2009, I got my real estate license. I read the Millionaire Real Estate Agent book. I had my first closing in June, and I never had a month after it that I did not have a closing. And I read that book 5 to 7 times because I was sitting in empty open houses because nobody was buying houses, supposedly, and no one was coming. So I just read that book over and over again all year long, just did what it said. And lo and behold, if things didn't happen when you follow the model, that's how it all started. And then we realized, man, we can make such bigger impact in people's lives through real estate. And so we said, all right, scrap the design, build, sell thing. Let's go all in on real estate, and we'll offer the design services as an add-on to our current clients to help them get where they need to be.
You end up building a really thriving real estate business. I mean, 4 years later, you were making more than $1 million a year in this business. What was the driving lead generation factor in that company?
So our two biggest sources was we did a farm and our sphere. So I started a farm literally, again, it was because of the book. So many successful agents told me not to do farming. They were like, you're going to be in a niche. You're not going to get any other business. And I looked at these top agents in my market who were awesome. And then I was like, okay, but Gary Keller is a little more successful than you. So I'm just going to try it. And maybe I'm wrong. I'm with Gary on this one. And I tried it. A lot of those agents have come back and they ask me now, how did I do it? What can they do to have the same thing? And so I took, well, and remember my story, we were living paycheck to paycheck. I mean, like, Joshua is still delivering pizza while we're starting the real estate business. We actually have to stop delivering pizza because a client walks in and Joshua has to like duck below the bar so that a client doesn't see us delivering pizza. But I took my first paycheck, the paycheck that we had been waiting almost a year and a half for. And I said, I'm going to take 5%. I can shave 5% off of this. And how many people can I mail to for an entire year? And that's going to be the beginning of my farm. And it was 8. So my farm started with 8 houses. And then every paycheck, I shaved 5% off. And I said, how many people can I mail to for an entire year? And just paycheck by paycheck, I was able to build into a 2,000 person farm.
And this 2,000 person farm, you still farm it today.
Yes.
How would you quantify the success for either GCI or units, or how did it work out?
Oh, it's wildly successful. It's the backbone of our business. It's also where we get to pour into a community in a way that makes all of this feel good too. Like, it's a give and take. That's what I love about farming, is because you get to give good service and really truly be the expert in the neighborhood. We started a farmer's market in the neighborhood. We started events that the neighborhood has kind of like taken on and owns themselves. And so that's why we do this, to impact lives. And so that's the unsung value of a farm, is you get to change the community. Like, we truly changed the culture of that community by pouring into it. It moved from a community that didn't have a ton of getting out and knowing your neighbors to 5 years later, someone walks into my open house, doesn't know that I started Drinks in the Driveway, and starts asking like, oh yeah, we want to live here because we hear they do these cool things like Drinks in the Driveway. And I was like, we've done it. We've done it. We've helped this neighborhood.
I got to ask now. I wasn't planning on it, but you did this to me. What is Drinks in the Driveway?
So Drinks in the Driveway is the most amazing BYOB event that we do in this neighborhood, where there's open driveways, and open just means people are committed to standing in their driveway, bringing something to drink, and hanging out together for a couple hours. And so it's a zero cost event. People come to my office, pick up my signs, put my signs in their yard. They like have a wait list to host this, and it's great. And I started it. I was pregnant, so I was drinking water, so it doesn't have to be anything big. It literally just is 2 hours once a month through the summer that we hang out in driveways and meet neighbors.
I got to tell you, you're literally reciting most of high school for me, which was hanging out in other people's driveways.
Yeah, but it's legal now because you're an adult.
Much different. It's a different model. I agree. How many driveways at a time? And is this a Friday night, a Saturday night? Tell me exactly how to do it.
Okay, so we actually do it on Tuesday nights, mostly because it was the only night I could commit to. And it's 5:30 to 7:30. It's the second Tuesday of every month, May through September. We started May through October and then realized we were standing in the dark in October. So we stopped October and now we're May through September. Again, in the neighborhood of about 2,000 homes, we do about three driveways.
I mean, that's awesome. And then they're just hanging out there. Other people bring their own cocktail or whatever it is, as some adult libation, if you will. And then they just hang out and just congregate. So all you're doing is providing the structure of when we're going to do it, and then the signs to drive traffic to it.
Yep. And then we have team members who will go to, they'll wear their Fike shirt and show up and just hang out.
It's the biggest no-brainer ever.
It is.
So all of this culminates in you and Joshua living this life. If I heard it in passing, I'd say that's not real. Spending half your time in New York, traveling, still running a team that makes over $1 million a year back home in Nashville, doing the things you want to do, it feels like when you want to do them, which shouldn't be as unique as it sounds, but it is. How do you do that? Tell me exactly how I can do that.
Well, and I talked about it a little bit, but it really comes to defining your life and figuring out what it is. But before you do that, there's something much more practical. Like I say, the very first thing that I did in starting this was learning to quiet my mind. Why does that matter? But you'll see in a second. But I have a very fast-paced mind. I'm constantly thinking up ideas. It's actually what has made me successful, and what makes probably a lot of our listeners successful too, is you're constantly looking at ways to improve, or you're looking at things to do, or having new ideas in your business. And until you can learn to be still and pause those sort of thoughts, you can't do the bigger work that requires to get where you want to go, because you can't get where you want to go until you actually know where you want to go. And so I tell everybody, like, literally the very first thing that I did was learning the practice of meditation and starting to do that, because until you can slow down, you don't actually know what you want. You're just doing things on autopilot. And so it started very small with me. Like, Can I think about nothing but my breathing for 1 minute? And I would set an alarm, a timer on my clock. And when I would get to an appointment early, I would be like, all right, I'm not going to think about this appointment for 1 minute. I'm just going to think about my breathing. And I would fail miserably in 1 minute. But then as I started practicing and understanding that, oh, I maybe need to release some of my perfectionism and just fail at it over and over again, it started getting easier and I could rest before I got to work. I could rest when I needed a rest at work mentally. And so learning how to quiet your mind, it, for me, was the very first step.
Well, okay, we'll stay with this because there's a lot of folks out there that don't know how to meditate or they go and they read a book or they try to sit for a half hour. They make it 30 seconds, deem themselves a failure, get up and go watch Netflix, which is all good. No judgment on this show. Yeah. We're all journeying together. You start with a minute at odd times. Where does it go from there?
Because that's what I did. I read a book. I had a friend who was like, oh, this would just think about your breathing. And I'm like, okay, think about your breathing. And I'm like, what am I going to be seeing in my mind while I'm thinking about my breathing? And then I actually got the Calm app and that helped me a ton. And I moved it to, all right, in the morning, the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to practice meditation. And then the Calm app, it's guided meditation. And that's so much easier because they're like, all right, her name is Tamara Lovett and she is so great. And she'll be like, now, Jason, I know you're thinking about something you need to do today. And so just with loving kindness, bring yourself back to your breath. And she's like just so non-judgmental, which is not what in my head, I'm always beating myself up when I'm failing at things. And so learning that loving kindness of like, all right, you did that did not work this time. And just bring yourself back. That's okay. So I'm a big fan of a like Calm app, guided meditation. I started doing it in the morning so that more than anything, I knew I could do it. If you do the hardest thing in the morning, then you know you can do it the rest of the day.
Tamara's great. Like if you don't know her, like she's been studying this for 18 years and she gets there by way of this kind of eating disorder that she's struggling with. She learns mindfulness. Her story is absolutely incredible. Big fan. So that resonates with me completely. By the way, if you're out there driving right now to an appointment, like most of you are, don't worry about taking notes. I'm taking all the notes today. You can get them at MREANotes.com. And we send them out every Thursday. So everything that we're saying, you can get in writing. No problem. All right. So I start by quieting my mind.
Yep.
I get that completely. Once I get there, what happens next? Do I just suddenly become enlightened?
No, definitely not. That's all that is the groundwork you need for the rest of what is happening. So Gary always talks about this in QL, like whose life are you living? And so like the next step is you need to define your life. Now that you're able to like separate yourself a little bit from work, you need to figure out what do you want your life to look like? And you need to find your passion and you need to find your identity. Like what were you created to do and what do you love? And it's like the dreaming section of it. But on the flip side, you also need to clarify in that time of what's at stake. Because, you know, if I had said, or if Joshua had said, you know what, I'm an architect and that's all that I do. I'm a really good architect. That's all that I want to do. And if he hadn't been willing to flex, or if I hadn't been willing to flex, what was at stake was this dream we had of working together. And so making sure that you clarify, like, what's at stake? What's the pain that's going to keep me on this track? And then you also have to be really honest with yourself about where you are in your journey of life. Like, I didn't know how miserable I was until I got to this point, and because I was succeeding at a very high level. I had gotten all the things and more than I could have imagined in my life. And I'm logical. And so logic says that means I should be happy. I should love my life. There should be nothing wrong. But once I realized who I was and what I was created for, I had built my worst nightmare. I was in the office, like I was at a desk job all day long, which was my worst nightmare. And so I had to get to the point, though, that I realized, wait, everybody else's definition of success may be different than mine. And I've got to be okay with that. And I've got to release my identity from what I'm putting out into the world to serve the life I want to live. And to me, that was like exactly, you know, Gary tells the story of his dad like chewing his fingernails or something like that. And then he realized that he was chewing his fingernails. And I sort of woke up and realized I've built a huge business by the model that is not my life that I wanted. this wasn't what we set out to do. We set out, my husband and I, to work together, and he's not even in this business now, but we're wildly successful, and we were supposed to build this business so we could travel and give our kids experiences, and now I'm here every day, day after day. This isn't it. This is not what it was for me.
I love that. Was there fear, though? Because as soon as you come to that epiphany, you look up, at least I would look up and say, I don't necessarily love the 9-to-5, but I sure like the money that it creates. And people get faced with this reality, which is, okay, Tiffany, I love it, but I got bills to pay. I got stuff that requires money.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy how the world requires money? Yeah. And that kind of goes to the third step, which is believe it is possible, whatever it is. So believe that you can have a life that you want and make money. Because when you do that, you can actually find the path. And that's where, like, the people you surround yourself with matter so much. Because if you are only surrounding yourself by people who say, well, your worth is your production and be afraid. They don't really say that, but they're like, well, this is what you need. Like, your business has to look like this or you're not going to succeed. And I remember the first time I heard Sarita Dua on stage talking about, she set her goal as the days off. She wanted more days off every year, not more GCI. She wanted the GCI to stay the same and her days off. And that, like, blew my mind because I'd never heard of that kind of success. And so then I started trying to find people like Sarita who are wanting to live a little bit of a different life. And it was part of why we created Her Best Life, was like around these people who are supporting not just one area of your life succeeding, but the wholeness of your life succeeding. And it is scary and it is fearful. And that's why it's almost impossible to do alone. Because when I got scared and I'm like, it can't work. You know, I had Diane or I had Kimber in my corner saying, no, no, you can do this. You've said this is important. Or are you willing to give up that other thing? Even my coach was asking me, did you pick your kids up from school today? You know, like, not, did you make your calls? Because I didn't need that kind of accountability. I needed accountability of releasing my identity from the success of my business and believing that there was a way for you to have a life and your business to be successful.
I love that. You know, we had Richard Stone on this show. And if you haven't listened to Richard's episode, give it a listen, because he woke up one day and said, I want to work less than 100 days a year, but I need to make more than $1 million. And all of the rest of the days he spends traveling the world. And when he gets to where he's going, he takes photographs there and then sells them and gives all that money to charity to fund his big why, which is giving back. And my head exploded, but it's similar to what you just said about Sarita. And I think I heard her when she gave that speech as well. And I remember feeling that's great for somebody else. I need to make this money and I have these other things. And what you're saying is that's simply a lack of number three in here, which is I lack the belief that it's possible.
Yeah. And it's why it's important that you hear people who are doing those things, because it helps support the belief. But just because no one else has done it before doesn't mean it's impossible. And that's one of my superpowers, is I truly believe anything is possible. You just have to iterate enough times. You have to be willing to fail enough times at it. And that's also why I think it's so important that we talk about, hey, man, Jason, your best life is different than mine. And that's okay. And we can both be running after two very different definitions of it and still be successful, both of us. The only way you fail is when you're chasing somebody else's definition of success.
That's so good. Okay, so I've quieted my mind. I've sat down and defined my life, whatever that process looked like for me. And I've taken into account my dreams. I've taken into account what's at stake. And I'm honest about where I am in my world and where I'm starting. I now get to the point where I believe that it's possible that I can have the life that I want and make money. What do I do next?
So, number four, set and hold boundaries. And this is kind of the iteration part of it. And my number one recommendation is start small. For me, I wanted to see my kids at some point in the day when they were little. And so I didn't work from 2 to 4 p.m. Because if you have little kids or you've ever had little kids, you understand that, like, waking them up from nap time is really the best, and they get pretty horrible the closer you get to dinner. And so I like cherry picked my time and I'm like 2 to 4. I'm going to have to go back to work because at that point I was still showing houses. Like I was still heavy in production. So I needed to go show houses in the evening. But from 2 to 4, I am not going to work at all. And what do you have to do to succeed at that? Is that possible? Again, that was a thing. People were like, no, that's in the middle of the workday. That's not possible. And I said, well, what if it is? How could this be? And so I started trying it. And then I realized, well, if I have my cell phone with me, I'm still working. Because if I feel it ring, I will ignore those kids because I have very little self-control. And so like I would go back and, oh, what could it be? Could something happen? So I learned I'm not allowed to have my cell phone from 2 to 4. And I like plugged it in a drawer and I was unreachable from 2 to 4 to the point that my parents were like, if something happens to us, how are we going to get a hold of you? And again, I'm like so committed to this outcome. I'm like, I'll get a home phone and you'll be the only person who knows the number. So I got a home phone in 2015 so that my parents could reach us. I was so committed to that. And then in starting small like that, that took a little while. It was probably 6 months, 9 months, a year of like actually doing that. I realized nothing fell apart from 2 to 4. Isn't that shocking? You know, like I'm not as important as I really think that I was. Oh my gosh, these problems work themselves out often if I didn't get involved in them. And so it sets up and reinforces that positive belief that you can do this. You know, that believe it's possible. Do it. So then I stopped working after 7, still in production. Never after 7 did I take a phone call. Our team still, no one works after 7 p.m. through expectation setting, through expectations with our clients. They know. And very rarely, the most people who get upset are the other agents who work after 7. And they're not our clients. So it works out. But then I took my kids out of school and we traveled for 9 months. In 2019, I actually didn't live in Nashville for 9 months and we traveled around the world and we ran our business. And this was the biggest step of belief in like how and how do you set those boundaries? Because I basically learned how to run a business via Zoom.
How old were your kids during this?
They were, let's see, 2nd and 3rd grade. So whatever age that is.
Okay, wait a second. You decided that it would be relaxing and phenomenal to take a 2nd grader and a 3rd grader out of school to travel the world for 9 months while working.
Relaxing isn't the right word, Jason. But again, that goes to what did we want? We wanted everybody in our family to pick a place that we wanted to live. Joshua and I had always wanted to live in New York City. We asked our kids, where did they want to live? Of course, they wanted to live where their cousins were. So in a little town in South Texas. And then our oldest was adopted and born in Taiwan. And so we wanted to take him to Taiwan, learn Mandarin, and we were going to have a sabbatical. So we were not going to work for 3 months. So we basically said, all right, we're going to work virtually for 6 months leading up to a 3-month sabbatical where we actually don't work. And so we had to learn how to run our entire business on Zoom. This is 2019, which means...
Oh my gosh. When COVID happens, you already know how to do all this?
Yeah. Basically, I started teaching KW agents how to run their business on Zoom because I'd been doing it for 6 months. Clients didn't even know what Zoom was when we were...
Clients? I didn't know what it was before COVID.
Yeah. It was very providential timing. We were equipped with skills that the whole industry needed when 2020 happened. So... You know, but that was a no, that's not possible. And I even thought it was sort of impossible. Like, how am I going to homeschool? I didn't think I could homeschool my kids and run a business. And so I actually pulled them out of school 100% committed to them learning nothing for a year and just knowing they would be able to catch up. And then turns out, oh, wait, you can do this. I stopped working in the morning and I worked with my kids in the morning. Again, those boundaries just... If you start setting them small and just start increasing into whatever your goal is, then you get there. And so my kids were homeschooled for 5 years after that because we knew we could do it.
You're so powerful. It's incredible to me because I'm coming off of an experience where I literally served mac and cheese last night with the powdered cheese on the side because I totally forgotten to stir it. And you're getting up in the morning and homeschooling and running this business and heading to Taiwan. Like, it went from so small, I'm not going to work from 2 to 4, to so big.
Yeah. It builds on itself. If you're like, all right, that impossible thing was possible. Okay, what's the next impossible thing? Like, that sounds like I'm some superwoman. And I do have a high capacity. But also, I said, well, homeschooling needs to look a little different. Like, I'm going to equip my children. I'm going to basically, like, manage their school. I'm not going to teach them. I'm going to manage their schooling like I manage my business. So my kids, here's the list of things you guys have to do, third and fourth grader, before you get screens. Here's my availability to help you. So slot yourself in to my time. And that's what school looked like. And it looked like failure for a while. They didn't get screen time for 3 weeks because they chose to play Legos, because I wasn't managing what they were doing. But then that pain got big enough that they're like, oh, we're going to actually do school. And then they built the habit to get school done by noon every day, slotting into mom's couple hours of time. And so even homeschooling, like what you think homeschooling has to look like, could be totally different. And that's what I want to encourage everybody here. Like, running a business and homeschooling your kids, or running a giant business in 20 cities, or whatever your thing is, it doesn't have to look like you think it does. What if you were so open to the outcome that you iterated until it was possible into whatever it needed to look like so you could have the big business and the big life? You've got your quiet mind, and now you just start repeating and go back to, is this the life I wanted? And, you know, revisit that. And then if it isn't, or you need to iterate, all right, then, you know, what do you need to do next? Make sure you know where you're starting, believe it's possible, and start setting some new boundaries around whatever that is. But the hardest part is truly believing that your worth as a person is not tied to your business. Because when we left, when I took that big jump in 2019, like, we were 100% committed to this business failing while we were gone. Like, not, oh, we're committed to that being the outcome, but we were so committed to doing this for our family that we were okay if we came back to nothing. Because our business wasn't ready. We didn't have all the people in place. We didn't wait until our life was perfect to go live our dream. We said, this is where we are in time. What does it need to look like? Are we okay with the worst case scenario? Or is that really the worst case scenario? No, our business failing, not the worst case scenario. We'll come back and build it again. But we had to get to that point. We had to be able to say, it is okay. And we will redo it when we get back. Because actually, worst case scenario is having this dream with our kids and never having tried.
That's so good. You know, if I was titling this, I'd call it Dreams Lived. You wake up every day and you're willing to throw out what you've built if something new that becomes powerful and forced in your life. That's kind of what's so unique about this. You're taking inventory and you're willing to make changes.
Yeah. And money does help that, which is one thing that I would say that Joshua and I did really well in that first 4 years. If you are like in the building phase or wherever you are, if you truly want to live your dreams, don't expand your lifestyle. We lived like we were still paycheck to paycheck when we were almost at $1 million business. We would go out to eat with friends. We would do that, but just a little bit. And we weren't buying fancy cars or fancy clothes. We were buying real estate. And so, like, our portfolio grew very quickly, and our passive income grew very quickly. I believe you can do this without that, but it does make it easier to be brave when you have a little bit of passive income coming in.
I happen to know for a fact that you have so many people out there right now that are like, I want more of this. What's the best way for them to get more of this into your life? Is it through Her Best Life?
So, yeah, I mean, any female in your life should definitely get connected to Her Best Life. That's where we focus on female leaders doing exactly this, whatever their version of this looks like. We focus on all the areas of your life. If you are not a female, I also teach this. I come to retreats and I do speaking around this exact thing in a very interactive and workshop way where you can leave with part of this done. And so to me, it's just listen to this over and over again, or listen to the other guy that travels, or listen to Sarita. Like, surround yourself with people who define their success more broadly.
Genius. Friends, go check it out, herbestlife.com. I still am holding out hope that I'll be a guest there one day, but it's not looking great. But I'm telling you, everyone that I know and everyone that I have sent absolutely raves about it. We've had a whole bunch of those folks on this show. I'm telling you, you'll love it. Also, listen to Empire Building. That's a podcast we've had, and you have some amazing partners there. We've had a bunch of y'all on our show. Love your podcast, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Well, we talk about all of this sort of stuff in all the different areas of your life, how to have not just a big business, but a big life.
Cool. All right, friends, do it. Tiffany, we want you to join us in the lightning round. Now, we're going to ask you a series of questions in quick succession, and we want the first thing that comes to your mind. Will you play with us?
Yes, Jason, I accept.
What is your favorite color?
Blue.
What is your favorite food?
Tacos.
What is your favorite movie?
Ooh, okay, so I went to film school, and you're supposed to have, like, a bigger answer to your favorite movie. Back in college, my favorite movie was Austin Powers. And so I used to say Austin Powers in film classes just to see what they would actually say. But my real answer is Thelma and Louise is my favorite movie.
Okay, stop the lightning round. Number one, we've never had an Austin Powers reference on this show. So, behave.
It does not hold up, guys. Have you watched it lately?
Unfortunately, I have, because I have a little person in my life who is just discovering it. And so, yes, and I would agree with your assessment.
Does not hold up.
Thelma and Louise. Great film, by the way.
It is. So with the Empire Circle and Her Best Life, we went to the Grand Canyon last year. And, you know, not to spoil it, but I mean, it's an old movie. If I'm spoiling this, sorry. They drive off into the Grand Canyon, and it was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy how they filmed this. And I loved the story. I loved how they got it done.
So good. What's your favorite sound?
Ooh, my favorite sound is my son practicing his piano.
Love that. Do you have a book? It doesn't have to be anything new. And you've already mentioned your love for MREA, so don't feel the need. What book do you think everybody out there should read? And I know it's hard to pick one. I'm going to ask you to do it.
Oh, dang. So the first one that comes to mind is Integrity. And I'm trying to think of who the author is of that. Let me see if I can quickly. But it is basically a book about, it redefines integrity. Oh, it's Dr. Henry Cloud is who wrote it. And it's become a staple in my life and my business. We read it every few years. It's, you know, defines integrity as doing what you say you're going to do, even when the emotion behind that decision is gone, not just following through on what you say you're going to do.
The thing that makes that book so great is, you know, he talks about integrity as a thing that's avoided by reality, as opposed to how do I bring integrity into my reality, which was a much different way to think about the word than I think most people do.
It redefined the word for me in such a way that, and every chapter is just so juicy. So that's highly recommend.
Other than your own and other than this one, is there a podcast that you like to listen to? What voices do you like to have in your head?
Currently, I am listening to Rules of Life. It's John Mark Comer. It is a Christian worldview podcast about the cycles of discipline in your life. So things like Sabbath, like resting and solitude and all of that. So the patterns you can put into your life that help you live a full life.
You have absolutely changed the trajectory of my day. Now, I don't say, no one's ever heard me say that on this show because I never have. I love the way that you see the world, and I love the way that the world meets the way you see it.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jason.
Friends, that is Tiffany Fikes. All we can say is thank you.
Go live big lives.
I don't want to steal the title of another book, but if this wasn't Chicken Soup for the Soul, I don't know what is. I am so inspired and so moved by the things that Tiffany said that I can't even begin to tell you. And you know why? And I've said it so many times. You know why you love this show? Because we interview journeyers. You're a journeyer. You're seeking something. And we interview and document the people who are also seeking. I love that she's willing to look up, take inventory in her life, and truly ask the questions, is what I wanted still what I want? Am I happy that I got this? Is this still what I want? And then the power to will herself to literally believe that she not only deserves, but that she can obtain what she wants. I'm reminded of a book, one of my favorites, called The Alchemist. If you haven't read it, pick it up. And on page 20, there's a quote. And I want you to imagine there's this little boy who's talking to this wise old sage. And the boy says, "What's the greatest lie in the world?" And the old sage answers, "It's this, that at a certain point in our lives, we lose control of what's happening to us, and our lives become controlled by fate. That's the greatest lie in the world." That's so good. And that's it. That's what she's saying. She's saying that if you just sit and quiet your mind long enough, if you decide that what you want is obtainable, if you're realistic about where you are, if you then start to believe ardently that it's possible, and then simply start taking the actions to get there, beginning by setting and holding boundaries and moving gradually, there is nothing that you can't achieve. And if that's not the most inspiring thing you've heard all week, friends, then this isn't the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. Here's what I know. You deserve it. Go forth and do likewise. There it is. That wraps another episode. Friends, I don't know what you're taking out of this. I really don't. I'll tell you what I want you to be taking out of it, which is these are the people that are having tremendously big lives. And the reason it's happening is because they're setting up the models and systems to do just that. Gary Keller told me that leadership is teaching people how to think so that they do the things they need to do when they need to do them, so that ultimately they get the things they want when they want to have them. And that's what I want for you. You're all leaders, but it begins with leading ourselves. If you're enjoying this podcast, I want you to click the subscribe button anywhere that you get your podcasts. We want to be the voice in your head every single week. And every week, we're dropping new content. We also send out a newsletter at the conclusion of every show to make sure that you get the highest points and the models and systems that were discussed. So if you want to sign up, I need your name and your email address. Head over to themillionaireagentpodcast.com. Millionaireagentpodcast.com. Enter your name and your email address, and every week, that newsletter will be in your box. Friends, you just went on a journey. I hope that what happens between now and the next time we meet is absolutely wonderful for you. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information. Warning: you must comply with the TCPA and any other federal, state, or local laws, including for B2B calls and texts. Never call or text a number on any do not call list, and do not use an auto dialer or artificial voice or pre-recorded messages without proper consent. Contact your attorney to ensure your compliance.